Hello and welcome to CME Outfitters Snack. Today we will be discussing GLP-1 receptor agonists unlocked, transforming type 2 diabetes care from pathology to practice. Supported by an educational grant from Novo Nordisk. This activity may include discussions of products or devices that are not currently labeled for use by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. I'm Michael G. Knight. I'm an internal medicine and obesity medicine physician and a clinical associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. And I have my colleague, Dr. McGuire, here as well. And I'm going to invite him to introduce himself.
Hey, Michael. I'm Darren McGuire. I'm a professor of medicine at UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. I'm a cardiologist and have spent 30 years doing cardiovascular outcomes trials in diabetes and more recently in obesity.
Thank you for being with us. Let's take a look at our learning objectives. Our first learning objective is to identify the mechanisms of action of GLP-1 receptor agonists, including their effects on key organ systems, including the pancreas, liver, brain, kidneys, and cardiovascular system. Our second learning objective is to differentiate current and emerging GLP-1 receptor agonist therapies based on their dosing schedules, administration methods, and glycemic and extraglycemic benefits. Let's start with a case. So we have a patient case for KR. He is a 45-year-old man who was recently discharged from a tertiary care center following hospitalization for an acute coronary syndrome, during which he underwent percutaneous coronary intervention with stent placement to his left anterior descending artery. He presents to his rural primary care clinic for follow-up. Some of the conditions that we mentioned include type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and CAD. His most recent A1C was 8.2%, with an eGFR of 62, a BMI of 34, and a blood pressure of 142 over 88, with an LDL-C at 58. His urine albumin-creatinine ratio is 120. And he is on a number of medications, including aspirin, atorvastatin, clopidogrel, metformin, lisinopril, and metoprolol. What systemic effects of GLP-1 receptor agonists would benefit this patient? I'll turn it to you, Dr. McGuire.
Well, he meets all the criteria for the evidence-based application of GLP-1 receptor agonist and also SGLT2 inhibitors, both proven effective for not just glucose control, but for cardiovascular risk reduction. His A1C is above target, so it's an easier conversation to convince people to think about adding something. But I'll remind people that the evidence basis we have for the GLP-1 receptor agonist and the SGLT2 inhibitors are independent of glycemic considerations. And so with diabetes and atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, he's just had an acute coronary syndrome. He has level 1A recommendation indication for both of these therapies. And for the GLP-1 receptor agonist, his BMI is 34. And so he's going to have the additive benefit of likely weight reduction with any of the evidence-based therapies that we have for cardiovascular disease. And we'll talk some about mechanism. Honestly, we don't know the mechanism of benefit of the GLP-1 receptor agonists. We have a pretty good understanding about their biology and their physiology. They work at the pancreatic level. They induce glucose-appropriate insulin secretion in response to carbohydrate ingestion, and so they lower blood glucose with. But because it's glucose dependent, with very little, if any, risk of hypoglycemia. But they also have effects on other organs. We know that with weight reduction that comes with the GLP-1 receptor agonists, we're seeing reductions in hepatic steatosis. They work on the brain, not just they induce satiety. And so people who are on these medications, their appetite is suppressed a bit. And when they eat, they feel full faster or they're satiated faster. And so they reduce caloric intake. And we've recently seen data now from a kidney-related outcomes trial with semaglutide for patients like this one with albuminuric diabetic kidney disease, that not only cardiovascular but kidney-related outcomes are improved. And so these drugs are working on lots of systems way above and beyond glucose control, which is how they first came to market.
Thank you, Dr. McGuire. We know that the guidelines for many of our societies, including the American Diabetes Association, also endorse the utilization of GLP-1 receptor agonists. And when we think about the most recent guidelines, particularly when the goal is to have a cardiovascular and kidney risk reduction in a high-risk individual with type 2 diabetes, we really want to think about what conditions they have. So if they have ASCVD, the recommendations are to consider a GLP-1 receptor agonist or SGLT2 inhibitor. And then if the A1C is not a goal, continuing on the treatment pathway. It also includes if there's a potential benefit for a MASLD or MASH and indicating a benefit for GLP-1 receptor agonist. We then think over to CKD, where we see a benefit there. As well in the choice between the SGLT2 and the GLP-1 receptor agonist. When we think about the goal of the achievement or maintenance of weight and glycemic goals, then we certainly do see the inclusion of GLP-1 receptor agonist as an option for treatment there. And so again, we are seeing our professional society guidelines that are aligning with the benefits of this treatment in a variety of use cases. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Dr. McGuire, to talk about some of the ESC guidelines for the management of cardiovascular disease in patients with type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, and you brought up a couple of important points. And so I had the privilege of writing the chapter on antihyperglycemic therapies for the ESC guideline. And we took a more aggressive stance, honestly, from the cardiology perspective than the American Diabetes Association. So if you look at the ADA guidance, they recommend an SGLT2 inhibitor and or a GLP-1 receptor agonist, and then predicate the addition of the other class on hemoglobin A1C. But that's not how we did the trials. We've done these trials over the past 15 years, independent of glycemic considerations. We're using GLP-1 receptor agonist versus placebo, often on a background of SGLT2 inhibitor and vice versa. And so what we've seen in these trials is that the cardiovascular risk reduction and the kidney risk mitigation is independent of whether the other agent is on board. And so in our ESC guideline, we took out the either or. We unequivocally recommend both classes to be used concomitantly. And a lot of people push back and say, you know, we've never studied them in combination, but they are such different pathophysiologic interventions that we don't need to study them in combination. I take this back to the heart failure with reduced ejection fraction field, where we have four pillars of therapy: RAS inhibition, beta blockers, mineralocorticoid antagonist, and SGLT2 inhibitors. We've never done trials of combinations of these therapies. They're simply in parallel, and it's not either or. And so in heart failure, we use all of them. And in people with diabetes and atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, and now with albuminuric kidney disease, or even kidney disease in general, we should be considering these therapies independently of each other. Because they each came to market initially as glucose lowering therapies, people lump them more together than separate them, but they're completely different medical therapies. And so for the GLP-1 receptor agonist, there's a clear indication for cardiovascular risk reduction and for kidney risk reduction, but you also get the additive benefit. And we have a few therapies that are approved for the treatment of overweight and obesity. And so you get the weight reduction therapy, but these drugs may also be directly affecting steatic hepatosis. So lots of benefits, and again, getting back to the baseline, these are 1A level indicated medications for the treatment of the patient that we've discussed.
Thank you, Dr. McGuire. Any thoughts on setting expectations for a CV risk mitigation of obesity pharmacotherapy?
Yeah, you know, we're finally winning the game in the field of obesity. We've studied obesity and interventions, whether it's lifestyle or pharmacotherapies, for decades, never proving that we could change the clinical outcome. But that all changed with the SELECT trial with semaglutide in a patient population without diabetes, but with overweight and obesity and prevalent atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. We proved that the intervention reduced cardiovascular risk. These are events that patients experience. And so it's not just weight is reduced, that we're actually intervening. And to the point is the risk mitigation for cardiovascular outcomes was observed long before weight was reduced. And so it's a win-win situation. Probably early on, these drugs are affecting stability of atherosclerotic plaque and reducing unstable events. And then you add to it over time as weight is reduced, you get favorable effects on the lipid profile, you get favorable effects on blood pressure. The weight itself is going down, and there's probably just additive and incremental benefit over time of these therapies.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at some of the current FDA indications for GLP-1 receptor agonists. And we have quite a few that may have different administration or dosing schedules, as well as different glycemic and extraglycemic fits. So we have dulaglutide, exenatide, and liraglutide that are all administered subcutaneously and have a benefit on achieving glycemic targets for the treatment of patients with type 2 diabetes. And then dulaglutide and liraglutide also have an additional MACE reduction in patients with type 2 diabetes and with CVD. When we go on to semaglutide, we see not only the type 2 diabetes glycemic control and MACE reduction, but also reducing the risk of EGFR decline in patients with CKD. We then also see weight reduction and maintenance in patients in greater than or equal to 12 years. Also, a MACE reduction in patients with established CVD and either obesity or overweight. And most recently, also indication for the treatment of non-cirrhotic MASH with moderate to advanced liver fibrosis in adults. We have a semaglutide oral, which is shown to have type 2 diabetes benefits on glycemic control. And then, of course, tirzepatide, which is another subcutaneous weekly injection that, in addition to glycemic control and weight reduction, also has an indication for obstructive sleep apnea in adults with obesity.
I think the conversation comes down, you know, there are lots of members of this class that have been studied, but I think it boils down now to those that have proven efficacy for clinical outcomes. So liraglutide was the first. It's once daily injectable, so it has the disadvantage of more frequent dosing, but it's a very effective medicine. But the conversation really now is about dulaglutide and semaglutide, and we'll talk a little bit about tirzepatide. But these are once weekly injectables. They're very simple to take. A lot of patients are resistant to injecting themselves, but I tell you, these needles are so small. It's not only that they don't hurt, you can't feel the needle. You can't feel the needle go into the skin. And so it's really a very quick, if you can get a patient to do it one time to prove this is such a simple injection. But most recently, to your mention, I chaired the SOUL trial of oral semaglutide, where we proved oral semaglutide has the cardiovascular benefits of the class. And so for those patients who are completely resistant to an injection, we do have an oral option now, which is a big win for the patients that we treat. I will tell you, the bioavailability of the tablet is really unpredictable. And so I still encourage, if a patient will accept an injection, I would prescribe the injection over the tablet every day. But we have probably 50% of patients are just completely resistant to taking a shot. And so for those, we now have an oral formulation. And then to tirzepatide, this is a more complicated agent. It's once weekly injection. It's a dual agonist. So it's a GLP-1 receptor and a GIP agonist. So targeting two parallel pathways in the incretin biology. Tirzepatide has the most robust weight reduction of anything approved so far. And I'm on the executive committee. We'll be presenting just in the next couple of weeks the results from a 13,000 patient outcomes trial of tirzepatide, proving from press release, I can share this publicly, that it was non-inferior to dulaglutide, and we did an imputed placebo analysis. So we've demonstrated superiority against a placebo imputed for cardiovascular risk reduction.
Thank you, Dr. McGuire. Let's go back to our patient, KR. As we discussed, he was recently discharged from the hospital after an acute coronary syndrome and underwent intervention with stent placement. And so this patient with a history of type 2 diabetes, hypertension, CAD, elevated A1C at 8.2%, and elevated BMI at 34, we both agreed would benefit from and be a good candidate for GLP-1 receptor agonist treatment. Him coming to me, he would already be on many of these treatments, right? So he's going to be on standard of care for post-acute events like the statin and the aspirin and the clopidogrel. And then I would be considering, what can I add on top of this regimen, not only to improve his or lower his risk for an additional cardiovascular event, but to also treat comorbid conditions that are not controlled, which include his A1C, as well as his excess weight and elevated blood pressure. So I would go ahead and start a GLP-1 receptor agonist for this patient. Also consider adding on the SGLT2 inhibitor. We know that there's benefit there as well. And then really, in coordination with cardiology, watch and monitor for improvement in a number of the metrics that are uncontrolled. And so one question that I would have for you, Dr. McGuire, is how do we prioritize management of the comorbidities of this patient when we think about type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and CKD?
Yeah, I mean, the complicated answer is we target all of them. But fortunately, we have therapies that actually effectively risk mitigate several of those parallel comorbidities like kidney disease, heart failure, atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. And so for this patient, you know, and we started out talking, he's clearly has an indication for both a GLP-1 receptor agonist and an SGLT2 inhibitor. But as a cardiologist, I'd be remiss if I didn't say we've got to get better with the blood pressure. We've got to intensify the blood pressure management. He's on metoprolol. I would argue carvedilol may be a better choice. It will have favorable effects on glycemia as well as more of a blood pressure impulse. His LDL is 58, which everybody would say is pretty good, but I endorse the European guidelines as his LDL needs to be less than 55. And so we need to intensify his LDL therapy as well. And again, getting on a GLP-1 receptor agonist, and with an SGLT2 inhibitor, his weight should come down, which will favorably affect the blood pressure and the lipid profile as well.
Now, does the rural setting affect your approach for this patient?
It doesn't. It affects my communication, and I'm glad we're doing this program because every patient doesn't have an endocrinologist or a cardiologist in their pocket. So the application of this evidence falls squarely onto the shoulders of the primary care community, and in rural or urban, shouldn't make a difference. If patients have access, now we haven't talked about, you know, these are expensive therapies, but fortunately for us and more fortunately for the patients, third party payers are more and more willing to cover these therapies for their cardiovascular risk reduction. And so for most people with third party payer coverage, we're able to get these therapies affordably to the patients. But the fact that he's going back to a rural clinic, you know, I grew up in Mount Home, Arkansas, which you can't get more rural than that. But I expect the same level of care there than in my hospital here in Dallas.
Now, Dr. McGuire, we know that there are a number of agents in the pipeline. Can you tell us a little bit about phase 3 investigational GLP-1 receptor agonists?
Yeah, the pipeline is crazy. I think we have over 84 compounds being developed in phase 1 or beyond. We're involved in several phase three trials of novel therapeutics. We're now exploring other pathways. So glucagon receptor agonism combined with GLP-1 receptor is a target. There is a therapy, retatrutide, that is a tri-agonist, GLP-1, GIP, and glucagon. And then there are also non-incretin pathways that are being explored, all being developed primarily as we entered this field. They were primarily developed for the treatment of hyperglycemia and type 2 diabetes. But now the whole field has shifted, and it's an obesity research field now, where we're studying these drugs primarily for indication for overweight and obesity. And often in parallel, we have metabolic associated fatty liver disease programs and also hyperglycemia evaluations, but they're being primarily evaluated for persons with overweight and obesity.
Thank you. Now, to help you put this information into action, here are some SMART goals. Over the next 3 months, try to discuss GLP-1 receptor agonist effects on pancreas, liver, brain, kidneys, and the cardiovascular system with colleagues and patients. Identify patients with ASCVD risk who may benefit from GLP-1 receptor agonists beyond glycemic control. Tailor treatment plans by considering access, dosing, administration, and cardiorenal metabolic benefit. And stay updated on emerging GLP-1 receptor agonist and combination therapies. I want to thank the audience for being with us, and of course, thank Dr. McGuire for bringing his expertise in this area to this program. And of course, the CME Outfitters for producing this program. Visit the Metabolic Diseases Hub, where you will find free resources and education for healthcare professionals and patients. Please take a look at other programs in this series, and don't forget to register for a live Q&A on November 13th, 2025. Watch the whole series and claim your badge as a patient-first diabetes management champion. Don't forget to claim your CME and CE credit by taking the post-test and evaluation online.